Grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Good morning.
Good morning.
Please be seated. Okay. So, symbols matter. Symbols create realities for us. In fact, I'm speaking in nothing but symbols. Words are symbols, and you've been trained at a very early age to interpret all the symbols that are coming right out of my mouth. Letters themselves are each symbols, forming words are symbols, given pronunciation, another symbol. We're in a church packed full of symbols all around us. And if we didn't have these symbols, we'd invent them. It's always so charmingly disingenuous of the current crop of churches that meet big box Walmart type buildings that they've removed all the symbols because they think they might offend seekers or newcomers. But they have the big globe kind of whirling around them. And of course, the ministries are all named after somebody. It's an ego, move of ego. And this is crazy. But people will find symbols even if you try to remove them, just like rituals. Human beings need them and will invent them if we don't have them. And so that's why it's important to be part of a church that understands it has a history and is connected to it. Because otherwise we're susceptible to think, oh, we don't have a history, so we'll just invent something new and it's okay. Which might be fine, but I prefer ones that have history to them so you can test them, see what fruit they bear. Symbols all the time are necessary for us to exist. You exist on an economy built on symbols. Currency. It's a transfer of value, right? I don't have time to make myself a t-shirt, so I'll fork over some money, transfer of my value and time, to someone in Vietnam through a chain of events who winds up getting me my t-shirt. Right? That's how it all works. I don't have time to cut the lawn at the church, so we transfer money to a lawn maintenance organization. I don't have money to do my taxes. I have somebody who's smarter than me. I will pay them for whatever that's worth. Et cetera, et cetera. It goes down the line. So money is time compressed. Money itself is a symbol. And even on the symbols of money are symbols. We put dead presidents on there. One should be removed because it's an offensive president. It's the third most popular bill. It's the 20th. It's old Hickory, Andrew Jackson. He was on there because he was a brilliant tactician, and in the War of 1812, he largely fought a battle after the Treaty of Ghent was signed, so the war was over, but they fought it anyway out in New Orleans. So he was put on in 1928. He was given to our $20 bill for reasons that the Andrew Jackson Museum doesn't understand. But he was also the guy who enforced the Indian Relocation Act that slaughtered tens of thousands of Native Americans on their way to Oklahoma in order to have slaveholding states expand their territory. And even though the Supreme Court declared that act unconstitutional, he enforced it anyway. Now, he wasn't Caesar. Today's gospel lesson, we have a coin with the image of Caesar on it. But certainly Jackson didn't think of himself as Caesar, but he's more than happy to decide who lives and who dies. And so we have this image of this guy on our money, who isn't, for any of us, an image of sainthood or a good president of any kind. What does it mean when that transfer of value, time compressed with an idol on it, sits on the altar and is given over to the mission of the church? It's sort of complicated. It's complicated. Into this same, so we're not that far removed from Jesus and the Pharisees in the story today, because it was pretty complicated then. How do you live and exist in a system that really doesn't support, say, your values. You know, or whatever those are, and we all do. So how do you do that in a way that helps you? In a way that supports them? So what do you do as a Christian? Now, I know the definition of what it is to be a Christian is pretty complicated, too. Based on our Facebook conversations. One of the ways that's lovely about it, though, is the fact that we so respect and honor each other's dignity and worth because we believe all of us have been created in the image of God. Therefore, that sort of highest value, Jesus, is more important than the other ones, we might argue about. Having that priority way high up is the most important thing to us as Christians. Hence, this really big icon to which we had the children do, subversive act of propaganda, taught them about the value and the worth of an image. Jesus takes this coin and then he says, well, whose image is on it? And that word image is essential because it's the word icon that we use in the church today. Icons. Thank you again, Gabrielle. Going back soon, I hope, to get more words. Icon and image. Whose image is it? Whose likeness is it? We look as Christians at each other as the icon of Christ. That's where all our respect and dignity is grounded, into each of you. So we don't look at our children as pre-adults. We don't look at our retirees as useful adults at one time. We don't look at our teenagers as threats. We see within each, all of you, that aspect of Christ. And that changes things. It changes things because our time compressed, the money that we have, no matter how complicated that symbol is, it's grounded in a higher value, that is, what it's used for. Now, going even higher than that, here is Jesus. I think he's almost being sarcastic. You can't tell from the language, but render to Caesar that which is Caesar's, render to God that which is God's. Is that a 50-50 split, you think? 90-10? You know, that's the silly thing about worldly power, whether that's Andrew Jackson or any president you want to name, whether that's the priest of a church or a baby in somebody's arms. What is it, God's? What is it merely rented, borrowed? What doesn't always have to be turned back? Always and everything. The Boy Scouts taught me a great lesson. When you borrow something, give it back better than you found it. I get a tool, a little dirty, I use it, clean it up, and hand it back cleaner than when it was given to me to use. That's not a bad rule in life. You've been given life. Give it back better than you found it. Because it's not yours anyway. When we act from ownership, we act from fear and control. We don't act from courage. I don't own it anyway. best I can do is give it back better than I found it. That's true of the people you love. It's true with your hourly breath. It's certainly true with the planet we live on. What are we doing to give it back better than we found it? And you know, a baby can do it. Well, maybe not a baby. But a child growing up, at any stage in life, normally you can give it back better than you found it. It's not ours anyway. It's not ours. The only question then is how? Grudgingly? With fear? Grudgingly? With bitterness? Because I don't get to hold on to life forever? Grudgingly, with anger because somebody else is getting a better deal than me? Or do you just say, I'm not in charge. I'm going to give whatever's been given to me back better than I found. Not in comparison to anyone else. I wish I... Please remind me of this sermon. It's really a good idea. I just hope you can remind us all of it and each other as we move through life. It's just so hard, and we're so confused, and we're so tricked into thinking it's ours.